Welcome to CFRI Cystic Fibrosis Community Voices, a video podcast series created by and for the cystic fibrosis community.
Hello, and welcome to CFRI's CF Community Voices, coming to you from our home studio in Palo Alto, California. I'm Sue Landgraf, Executive Director of Cystic Fibrosis Research Incorporated, CFRI, and I'm very pleased to welcome our viewers and listeners. We have a very special program ahead, but before getting started, I want to thank our generous sponsors, Vertex Pharmaceuticals, Chiesa USA, Gilead Sciences, Genentech, and Proteostasis Therapeutics. I also would like to note that no information presented in this podcast is intended for a patient's diagnosis or treatment. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. Thank you, and let's get started.
Hello, my name is Sonia Haggett. I'm an adult with CF. As well, I am a social worker and I've worked in community mental health. I'm 42 years old. That's very important to say when you're a CF adult and you're talking about your life's journey. I was born at UCSF and I went to elementary school in Sassoon, California. I went to junior high school in Oakland, California, and I then returned to Sassoon, California for high school. I was treated at UCSF until I was like 6 or 7 years old, and then I switched to Kaiser Oakland, their CF center, because that was my father's insurance at the time. I was diagnosed at a year by a sweat test. And my parents noticed like my general fussiness, the oily stools, and the salt cap around my forehead. And I'm really thankful that I was born at a teaching institution, a place that was on top of it, so that way things were caught early. I have four brothers, and they're all by marriage, basically. My parents only had me, but my dad's second wife had two sons, so I inherited two brothers. And then my dad's third wife had a son also. My family life was pretty tumultuous. My parents definitely did the best they could, but they had a very difficult time managing CF. I'm very grateful that I was healthy and had stable health when I was a child, because I think otherwise, things could have been a lot different for me. I felt very alone with my CF and my family. But during my teen years, when I was rebelling, I basically stopped going for a couple of years. And, that wasn't the wisest decision, but there weren't any adults in my life like monitoring my behavior around my healthcare. And so that's what I chose to do. But when I was 19, I started having hemoptysis. So that, obviously was a red flag that I needed to go get care. I know that, not having that support and feeling alone with my CF at a young age definitely formed how I coped with CF. And as an adult, my parents said to me, my father said to me, "I've always been afraid of you." That just really gave me a lot of insight into his, how his coping with CF and how he dealt with me. Because as I was getting sicker as an adult, I felt him becoming more and more distant from me. And then my mother said to me that I was healthy when I was a child, so therefore she could ignore it. I will say, though, that my mother has really put in a lot of effort to step up to the plate at this point in time. She has become, you know, a huge support for me during transplant, post-transplant, before that time. And so, you know, I'm very pleased that my mom was able to be there for me during that really, you know, my time of need. In elementary school, I was very lucky because I was pretty healthy, so I could do stuff just as other children did in terms of doing PE and playing at school, after school. But I did have embarrassment around my bowel movements. I had a lot of digestive involvement when I was young, and so, you know, just the smelly bowel movements constantly when, you know, being at school. And, you know, even when, like, after school, if it was we were playing at my house or if we were playing at their house, it was, you know, it was just embarrassing. And then also, too, like, being teased about being skinny. You know, kids tease each other about anything regardless. So, you know, in retrospect, I guess it could have been worse. But, you know, at the time, it hurt my feelings. So, In puberty was much, much more difficult. Well, I guess puberty is difficult for everybody as well. But, you know, I just had a lot of embarrassment, a lot of shame about everything that my body was doing. I was late to develop my secondary sexual characteristics. And, you know, I was, again, embarrassed about being thin, like curvy girls, I guess, were in style. And, you know, I wasn't a curvy girl. I was like 5'7" and, I don't know, like 110 pounds. And so just really, I wanted to like wear a shower curtain and just cover myself when I would go to school and stuff. So, yeah, rough times. As a young adult, the next like issue that impacted me was that's when I started having hemoptysis, and that's also when I was like, I had to somehow face CF in a different way than I already was, you know, because I wasn't raised to face CF head on. You know, I read those quotes from my parents, what they said, and, you know, so that was my coping mechanism as well, was just to put it to the side. I will note, though, that it was easier for me to put things to the side because I didn't culture Pseudomonas until my early 20s. So I wasn't, you know, experiencing that severe lung damage from having Pseudomonas. you know, hemoptysis also made me realize that I was gonna have to change my plans, you know, because young adulthood, I finished high school. I had a part-time job during high school. Then after I graduated, I went to community college. I was going to community college and working part-time as well. And, you know, had a social life. So, you know, I realized that I needed to, things weren't going to go as I planned. So that was, you know, a rough pill to swallow. You know, because me and my friends, we have our hopes and our dreams and our plans, and just mine weren't going to work out. And that's a hard thing to negotiate in my head. Because, you know, I'm a pretty determined person. So having this thing like derail me, I had a lot of angst, you know, about like how dare, you know, this disease mess up my life. It was really hard to accept. continuing with the developmental stages. Like, as I was an adult, you know, again, my health started getting worse. My hemoptysis episodes were getting worse, and I continued to deal with shame because, you know, as my health issues became more prevalent, they were, you know, impacting my relationships. They were impacting my school, and then they were impacting my work. So, you know, yeah, I tried my hardest to conceal my CF from, you know, the different parts of my life. You know, because again, it was the, you know, issue of shame, but I also didn't want to get treated any differently. You know, I want to be treated the same as my peers or as my coworkers, etc. If I want to go back to hemoptysis, you know, it really, I don't know how to put it into words how hemoptysis affects, like, I don't know, just your sense of security and life. Coughing up blood is a very scary experience. The feeling of, it's like you're drowning, and it's like a complete, like at that point in time, that was like the most I had ever felt out of control of my life. And, you know, I've had some very large hemoptysis episodes that, you know, I would say really changed the track of my life, that really impacted my mental health. 2005 was a wonderful year for me. I had just finished grad school. I had turned 30. I just was, I don't know, feeling just really happy and healthy and accomplished in my life. And kind of out of nowhere, surprisingly, because I had been taking such good care of myself, I had this ginormous lung bleed. And my doctor recommended lung transplant, or that I get worked up for a lung transplant. And I fought very hard against that, because to me, I felt like lung transplant equals that, you know, I'm pretty close to death. And so that really messed with my head. Yeah, the lung transplant thing was really hard, and I actually did agree to get a workup, but after I did the workup, I was like, nope, still no way, I'm not getting a lung transplant. I had just finished grad school, and so I said, you know, I was like, I'm going to get my social work license first. You know, that's first and foremost, I'm getting my social work license. Then I will consider getting a lung transplant. So yeah, that's that. Were my mental health issues recognized and acknowledged? Yes, they were recognized and acknowledged, but were they given the attention they deserved? No. I really wish there were screening and such, you know, before recent years, you know, because, you know, myself and my peers with CF, you know, it's been known for a long time that we struggle with mental health issues. Although I did advocate for myself in the mid late 90s, I was just noticing that I was just I was angry. I don't know. I can't remember much more than that. And I think the social worker or the nurse at UC Davis, she referred me to a therapist who knew about CF. And so that was just such a, you know, such a wonderful thing. She took my insurance and, you know, I met with her for quite a while, and I stopped going to her because she told me that I was depressed. And I was like, no, I'm yes, I'm just tired. You know, I'm tired all the time. And, you know, so I think that in retrospect, that was some resistance to, you know, labeling, like, yeah, resistance to having that label. But, you know, I think that although I resisted that label, I did need to, I needed to go to somebody to talk. Because it's hard to sometimes talk to friends and family about these, you know, the deep fears, the questions of life and death. Shame seems to be the theme throughout my life, I have found, surrounding my CF. So I think that, you know, speaking to a third party, like, who is there to not be judgmental and to listen, really, you know, made a difference and, you know, was helpful to talk, even though I was, you know, I resisted. It wasn't easy to find a therapist. I was asking my CF clinic for one, and they didn't turn up any resources. I would try to find a therapist on my own, and, you know, therapy is very cost prohibitive. I couldn't find a therapist that took my insurance, and so most therapists are cash, and, you know, they're very expensive, so it just wasn't an option. During one of my hospitalizations, I had a panic attack, the one and only time I had a panic attack, and it was like, you know, I wasn't feeling well, I couldn't breathe, and, you know, it was like, I don't know, sort of like this automatic thing my body was doing where I just couldn't stop breathing hard, you know, and of course, since my lungs are all CF'd out, it complicated the breathing during the panic attack, and you know, it was really unfortunate because I didn't get any support while I was in the hospital or after the fact, you know, of having this panic attack, and you know, my doctor was trying to get like a psychiatric consultation while I was inpatient, but that's like something basically for people who have more severe symptoms, such as, you know, psychosis or mania. And so since I was, you know, just anxiety and sadness and, you know, that kind of stuff, it was like, oh, sorry, we can't do anything. Oh, but there's a good ending to this story. There's a good ending to this story. In 2005, when I had a big bleed, I continued to advocate for myself to have my CF center help me get therapy. And every time I would be there, I would just, you know, let my needs be known quite emphatically. And finally, the social worker found me a therapist in 2006. And to this day, I still continue to see this therapist. So I've had the same therapist who I see weekly for the last 11 years. And it's been a really great experience that I really needed, you know. In therapy, I've been able to, you know, talk about the nitty-gritty of CF and talk about the issues with, you know, in my family of origin and just, you know, in general, work through my issues to just come to a place where life is easier now, where I feel I have the ability to just to feel at peace, I guess. I still continue to see my therapist. I'm not ready to stop seeing her anytime soon because I think I really need that support, and especially now post-transplant, because you know, life has definitely changed for the better. So in therapy, I just sort of talk freely, but also my therapist uses some cognitive behavioral methods to help me to change the way I think about things. You know, what is my response? You know, because you can't control the events per se, but you can control your response to the events. So that's been very helpful. The things that I have like taught myself and done myself are thought stopping, you know, because being anxious and sad, like it just sort of, there's this big dark snowball rolling down the mountain, and it just, you know, it rolls faster and faster and becomes darker and darker, and to just like cut it off. Just to stop that thought process. I learned that in a psychology class, actually. I'm a big fan of positive self-talk, you know, like when I am preparing to do something, or even when I am doing something, just to, you know, try to say positive things to myself, inside of myself, versus, you know, saying negative things. That's not always easy, but, you know, that's my goal, is to say nice things to myself. And it's also, you know, in managing CF, even, you know, managing CF and lung transplant, it's a daily task of working on acceptance and recommitting on a daily basis to taking care of myself. You know, it's a big job. It's hard. And, you know, I do have to tell myself every day, like, you know, this is what I want. I want a good life. And so, therefore, I'm going to do these things to take care of myself. Another thing that I learned in working in therapy is to forgive myself, because me and other people that I know, we can get very upset at ourselves for not being, you know, perfectly in compliance with our therapies every day. You know, I mean, I try my best, but I feel like I probably do mess up every day, you know, despite my best efforts. So I just have to like, okay, the past is the past, and today's the first day of the rest of my life. That's one of my favorite sayings. So today's the first day of the rest of my life, and I'm going to, you know, do a good job taking care of myself today. You know, taking care of myself includes, you know, feeding myself well, making sure I drink enough water, of course, taking my meds and doing whatever therapies I need to do. Having some fun, because fun is majorly important. You know, it's like, what is life about? And, you know, having fun and enjoying what life has to offer. And the other thing I can't forget about, you know, taking care of myself and things that are helpful is yoga and other exercise. You know, good for the lungs, and I particularly enjoy yoga and walking, which are sort of meditative sort of exercises. Like in the past, I've done spinning and step aerobics, things that were high impact, high energy, but I realized that it's more beneficial to my mental health when I do things that are calming and relaxing, but still forms of exercise. It was hard to start wearing oxygen because, like I was saying, with my big issue of shame about my CF, wearing oxygen in public is pretty, you know, saying it out loud that I have something majorly wrong with me. But I remember very clearly the day I started wearing oxygen that I told my mom I wanted to go out to dinner at this place where, you know, a lot of people go. decided, I was like, you know, if I were to choose to go with my feeling of shame and embarrassment about my CF, that I would be a recluse. I would stay in my apartment and I wouldn't go anywhere and I would be super depressed. So I was like, I can't choose that. I have to make a conscious choice to, you know, to go out. Even though it's hard to go out wearing oxygen, I needed to do something, you know, to maintain my quality of life. And, you know, going out of the house is the way to do that. Being inside of the house is not the way to do that. And now that I've been transplanted, it's a big change. It's a very big change. I've never been able to breathe so smoothly in my life. I have my independence back, which is incredible. Losing my independence pre-transplant was very, very difficult. You know, now I get to spend time, like, you know, extended time with my family and my friends. My hobby is salsa dancing. So before this, the last time I danced was in 2013. So in 2016, after my transplant, I was able to return to dancing. Slowly but surely, not full blast, slowly but surely. And I went skiing recently, which I hadn't done in, I don't know, 12 plus years. And I'm also, I'm a social worker, and I started a volunteer job once a week. So I'm definitely on track to getting my life back after getting my new lungs, and it feels really good. And in closing, I'll just say that if you are experiencing sadness, or if you think that you're depressed or anxious, it's understandable. CF is really hard. It is a big beast that you have to try to manage, and it's exhausting, it's tiring. The good thing now, though, is if you are overwhelmed, if you feel like you can't manage, there is help, more help now than there ever has been before. Mental health screening has been made more of a priority than it has been in the past. And in a lot of CF centers in the country, there are mental health professionals available to help and to offer services as well. Thank you very much for listening to my story. It was a pleasure.